On behalf of the Newhall Family Theater and Mark II Entertainment, welcome to the extended interview of Talking Backstage. I'm your host, Tom Lund, the theater manager for the Newhall Family Theater for the Performing Arts. And today my guest is Camber Moen. Camber works at Universal Studios Hollywood as one of their production managers. Hi, Camber. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So our first question that I usually start the interview with is, what schools did you attend in the Santa Clarita Valley?
So I attended Rio Vista Elementary for just sixth grade, because we did move up here when I started sixth grade from Orange County. And then I went to La Mesa Junior High. And then I went to Valencia High School.
Fantastic. And how old were you when you first got involved with the arts?
I started from the very beginning of my life. I was a dancer from the time I was two. Competitive. In the dance world for a very long time until we moved. And then I started getting into theater in high school.
Very cool. And what was that transition like? Like, what made you decide to go into theater from being a competitive dancer basically your entire life?
I found when I moved, it was a different kind of competitive world out here. And I just didn't really fit into it. And so my dad actually was trying to find other avenues for me to explore. And he saw a audition notice for a show called Scrooge, the Stingiest Man in Town at the Canyon Theater Guild. And so I went and I auditioned, and probably the my worst audition of my life, because I knew nothing, absolutely nothing. So the dance, that's all I knew. And I booked it, and it was part of my life ever since then.
So what got you interested in theater? Like, you go from a competitive dance world into the world of theater. It's two very different worlds. Had theater been a part of your life, like as an audience member?
It had. I started going to shows by the time I was 5 years old. My aunt was a performer in theater, and she was on cruise lines and traveled the world performing and singing. And my grandpa is actually a barbershop singer as well. So he was in that competitive circuit for many years as I grew up. So I grew up in that world as well. And so it always has been part of my life, and I just loved it. I saw Phantom of the Opera when I was about 5 years old. And I just remember sitting in my chair, just like gobsmacked, just sitting there like wide eyes, open mouth, from the first moment the orchestra started playing. And my parents say that I didn't move, didn't even flinch. I just was in awe of everything going on.
That's really cool. So talk about a little bit, because you said there is a difference between the competitive dance world in Orange County versus the competitive dance companies that are out in Santa Clarita. Can you give us a little bit of insight what you mean by that?
It really was the way the teaching styles were set up. So down in Orange County, at my studio, at least, when I was there, it was, by how well you were doing in learning and grasping knowledge. Okay. So you could be, you know, a younger person, which I was 6 years old when I started being competitive, and I was dancing with 10-year-olds most of the time.
Gotcha.
Whereas up here, it was just a different structure. So it was based on age groups and then divisions of those age groups. So when I moved up here, I started dancing with the younger kids, which meant it was younger moves and things that what I was used to. So it just didn't fit anymore in that world.
Gotcha. So then once you got to high school, did you start dancing competitively for the high school? Did you go into a different department or anything like that?
I didn't do any competitive dance past about sixth grade or so. Mm-hmm. I finished out my competitive year for sixth grade at my old studio. So I was actually going back and forth for a while.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I finished that out. And then when I started moving into junior high, I did do the dance team there, and I was part of the dance team, and I was captain of the dance team for a couple of years that I was there. And then when I moved into high school, that's when I got involved in theater, which still allowed me to dance. I was mostly a dancer when I first started in theater. I was in the dance chorus, and that's pretty much what I did until I started learning more skills. And I started developing as I went into theater classes and developing my acting skills and vocal skills in choir.
Fantastic. Let's dive into that a little bit. Now we're in high school. So what was the program like at Valencia High School when you were there?
The best. Steve Whalen is amazing. He really made sure that even from a young age of being 13, 14 years old, when you start, that you understand the different methods of acting and the different approaches that people can take. And really trying to show you all the different avenues that you can take. He allowed us to experiment. Usually when you start, though, it's freshman year. So it's theater 1A. It's basic things. You're learning a little bit of scene study, but you're trying to get a little bit more involved, but you're learning the backgrounds. So you're learning how things are done and what upstage means and what downstage means and a rake stage and all these things. And then once you get, you know, past that, and if you continue to move into the program more, you had the opportunity once you got into about sometimes sophomore year, depending on who you were, but mostly junior, senior year, he dedicated the last period class as a production class. So Usually the kids that were in productions with him or were really interested in really diving into that scene work and learning and really just studying.
Gotcha. Did you guys do any of the competitive stuff with your theater department?
We did. I actually did get to go to the Chapman Shakespeare competition.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And that was amazing. We ended up placing, I want to say it was second place, but we actually had a standing ovation from the entire audience when we were done. We did a scene from A Midsummer Night's Dream. It's the lover scene with Lysander, Hermia, Demetrius, and Helena. And It's traditionally close to a 20-minute scene. And at the Shakespeare Festival, it has to be within 10 to 15 minutes.
Wow. So
we had to shave off 5 minutes from our production version of the show to be able to fit it into the competition. And we made it by a hair. The lights went out on us as soon as we ran off stage. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So you did a full stage production of Midsummer Night's Dream at Valencia, and you took one of those scenes and competed with that?
We did. We had auditions in early, oh God, this has been many years now, so bear with me with timelines. But we had auditions, I think it was November of my junior year. And then we didn't actually do the show itself until spring of junior year. But the competition was in February.
Okay.
So we sat through winter break and all of that, the four of us really nailing in that scene and getting it up to competition level before we even worked with the rest of the cast after winter break and when we all came back and worked on the entire show.
So what's it like as a high school student performing Shakespeare? Because as you know, a lot of kids, even adults, they have this preconceived notion for Shakespeare, that Shakespeare's difficult to understand. It's that old English style. It's iambic pentameter. How was doing Shakespeare for you as a high school student?
I loved it. I really attribute it to Whalen and his teaching and his philosophies on learning. We literally sat down and had to write out every single bit of iambic pentameter so that we knew what words needed to be enunciated and what even syllables in those words needed to be enunciated. That's how you really start to learn it and understand it is sit down, if it's an iambic pentameter, that is. Sometimes it's not.
Right.
So sitting down, doing that, and then just reading it over and over and over again and taking it chunk by chunk. You can't have Shakespeare all in one bleh, you know? You have to, you really have to sit through and go, okay, let's read through this whole scene. Now, what do you think this means? And so equate it to today. What does that mean to you? So with Hermia, she wanted to be with Lysander. She loved him, but her father didn't want her to be with him. So what did that mean to me? And how did that make me feel so that I could then understand the text better?
It sounds like Wayland's class was very in-depth for a high school level course. Would you think that it was more on par with what some people get at like a collegiate level?
Yeah, 100%. Wayland actually started teaching back in Orange County at the Performing Arts the High School of the Performing Arts in Orange County. Gotcha. So he was used to a very almost collegiate style program, because their focus is theater, is performing, is acting.
Sure.
It's not just general education and you get to perform too if you want to. So he was used to very in-depth conversations on things. And so that really allowed us to kind of benefit from it. And he took that to normal general high school.
That's really amazing, because I know we've talked about it when I was at Saugus High at the same time. It was two completely different types of departments. I know, speaking as a performer myself, I was always jealous of the stuff that you guys were able to do at Valencia. So it's nice to hear that Wayland, although teaching high school, he still kind of approached it as if it was a higher level and didn't want to dumb it down or water it down for you guys.
Oh, yeah, definitely not watered down at all. I think it also came down to us, too. Mm-hmm. He had such a huge group of kids that wanted to do this and wanted this to be their life and wanted to make a career out of it. Some of us have gone on to make that a career, and some of us have used it as a stepping stone in our careers, like myself, but have ventured into different avenues of entertainment. But, you know, I think he saw how much we really needed that and wanted to push us, and we wanted to be pushed, and we wanted to explore and do richer theater than just the general theater. We got to do Elephant Man in high school.
That's
which
right.
A very dark and intense and imaginative show, because you can do it very simply like we did it, or you can do it with prosthetic makeup and, you know, all the special effects in it.
One of the things that I've noticed about the arts, especially for like high school students, it kind of becomes that safe place for you. And you kind of find that community. Do you think that that's something that you were able to discover at Valencia?
Oh, 100%. At least within our theater department, we were family. We even got a chance to work with our choir friends in different musicals. We were very fortunate that he had such trust in us to actually do a chorus line, which,
that's right.
If you know anything, that's a behemoth of a show. For high school students. And we achieved it and above and beyond because we had that tight-knit group of kids that just really wanted to be there for each other and support each other. And I think that even, at least during my time of theater and even, you know, high school theater, I think even each theater department for each high school really supported each other. We went to each other's shows. We hung out. We did the improvathon, which was a brainchild of our theater department, where we got to have everybody come together and have a 24-hour improv session. And it was ridiculous and hilarious. Yep. But it allowed us all to come together and, you know that we are here for each other and not just to be better than each other.
One of the shows you mentioned was A Chorus Line. And I know, again, you and I, we've talked about it a lot, but A Chorus Line is a dance-heavy show. It's not necessarily a show that you would expect to be done at a high school. And if I remember correctly, the choreographer had professional experience in the show. And if I remember correctly, she taught you guys, like, the original choreography?
She did. Nancy Alterman, who has worked with Steve Whalen forever, She was in the touring company of A Chorus Line, and she played Morales. And so she actually came in and directed the show with Steve, and they, I mean, she was amazing. We got to learn all of the original choreography. She didn't dumb it down for anybody. You had to learn it. If you didn't, then she was going to replace you, but only because, only because she wanted to uphold the standards of A Chorus Line, as you should.
Sure.
So asked for it. We wanted it. We wanted to do Chorus Line. We were dying to do Chorus Line. So, you know, it was a perk of where we were. We just got really lucky.
Do you think that your dance background helped you on that show, learning that style of choreography? Were you like one of the dance captains or anything like that on the show?
Yeah, I was. Yes. I did two spots, actually. I was Judy normally, and then I got to understudy Cassie, who's the lead. So it was pretty amazing. And I actually, the boys that were in the show who weren't the strongest dancers, who ended up being really good in the show, we actually spent many lunches and after schools with me teaching them, because Nancy would teach us a bunch of choreography and then they go, I'm sorry, what? So, you know, we would spend lots of lunches in the theater running and doing choreography over and over and over again.
You said that you kind of got your start with theater specifically by auditioning for a show at the Canyon Theater Guild. Did you continue performing with them even during high school? What was that like performing at a community theater?
I did. I performed forever. I can't even count how many years. It had its wonderfulness. I met some of my best friends there and, you know, people that I still talk to this day, and I can count on in an instant to be there for me. And hopefully they know that they can count on me. But, you know, it's like a different form of high school theater. But it's got maybe a little more money. And depending on what it is, and you have adults. So some of those adults are, you know, were professionals at some point or just are really good at what they do. And you got to just watch them. You got to watch them do their thing all the time and really just learn and experience things. And not even just in performance, like we were allowed to do multiple things. I got to choreograph. I got to direct there. I got to run a soundboard. I got to run a lighting board. I got to be a stage manager. I got to work in the box office. Like there's so many avenues that I got to take that are what make me who I am and how I know so much about the industry.
Absolutely. So let's take a piece by piece a little bit there. You said, first of all, that you got to be a choreographer. What's it like being a choreographer on a show? Walk me through that process of, you know, signing on to do a show and then coming up with dances and teaching.
So signing on to the show, sitting down with the director, getting their vision, because some shows, it's pretty straightforward. You know, like if it's a high school musical, that it's going to be a little more modern, contemporary dancing. So you kind of already get that knowledge in your brain. But if you did something along the lines of like an Oklahoma, that can be very different. That's going to be more ballet and more physical comedy and more very musical theater world. You're not necessarily going to add in all the you know, cool styles of the, you know, 20th century, maybe, but 21st century, I should say. It's really getting their vision and then going, okay, so this is what you want for this piece. So what kind of look are you going with for this piece? And then going back, and whether you have an assistant or if you have a co-choreographer, sitting down and really listening to the music, knowing where you are in the story, so that you can then translate that story into the choreography. Gotcha. So, you know, if take a high school musical, for instance, if it's Get Your Head in the Game, I know I'm going to have basketballs on the stage and the kids are going to have to play with basketball. Yeah. So how do I then teach kids how to perform dance choreography, sing, and dribble a basketball at the same time? You know, so it's all those kinds of elements that you have to figure out how they make sense and help push the story forward. You're not there to just add some fluff. You should be pushing the story forward as much as the music would push the story forward.
Now, on a show like High School Musical, and it's got iconic choreography and everyone is familiar with it, is that something that you kind of borrow some of the elements from the movie and put into the show? Or do you try to create your own image of your own version of High School Musical?
So for High School Musical in particular, I did borrow some of the elements, the iconic "We're All in This Together" dance and things. Yes, the clap.
Oh, it's this thing, right?
Yeah, that thing.
Oh my gosh.
I can't see my body right now when I'm doing it. So it's borrowing those things, but it's putting your own spin on it, being creative with it, having
sure.
you know, your own voice within the song and in within the choreography, but still doing Kenny Ortega justice.
You were able to direct, you were able to choreograph. Was there like a mentorship program or anything like that at the Canyon Theater Guild where like people that had that experience would show you the ropes so that, you know, you can work on your own eventually? Or is it just kind of throw you into the deep end and hope you swim?
There's not a formalized mentorship or anything, but I did get to work with choreographers that I worked with normal in our normal shows and everything. So, you know, I got to work with Rena and Jan Marie, who is a principal over at Sierra Vista.
Admin now. She's admin. Like up in the district office now.
There we go.
Yeah.
She's amazing. I love Jan. And work with, you know, some great people and really see their process. And I actually got to choreograph, I think it was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, I want to say.
Oh, okay.
Rena Bailey Barrett, who used to teach at COC, who's now living in Washington with her family.
Yeah.
We choreographed it together. And then from there, I was able to then venture out and do kind of my own things all the time. But it's not always a given. Sometimes you get a chance to do it alone. And sometimes, you know, you're paired up with somebody just to kind of make sure that you're feeling comfortable.
Sure. Which is a nice thing because it can be difficult as a younger person, especially to be put into that position of power, if you will, or a decision maker when you have, you know, cast members that are older than you. Did you experience anything like that where, you know, people looked at you differently because A, you're a young person and B, because you're a young female person? Did you face any sort of pushback or anything like that?
I think the only big pushback I ever got was just as I got older and knowing more and learning and having a more background knowledge on things and just having that background now. That's kind of where I started to get some pushback on. But for the most part, I think, when I first started as a choreographer, at least, people really were very nice to me and good to me. And I got to work on Annie Get Your Gum was the very first thing I did, where I got to do a couple That's of numbers. Right. And those numbers were all with the older cast. So they were 20 plus years older than me. But they were amazing. And, you know, I got to teach them skills that they didn't really know before. So we were learning from each other, which was a great experience.
What then inspired you to pursue a career in the arts? What was like your first job in entertainment?
Other than teaching, because I did teach at the CTG as well. I did their after school programs and I did their homeschool program for a long time. I started to get into the theme park world from lots of friends, and I auditioned. And I said, why not? I'll just audition. And I ended up getting booked for the summer of 2009, mm-hmm. if I'm remembering the years correctly, 2009.
It's 2009.
for Six Flags. And okay. So I started working there as a character performer and then also as a host of a show.
So when you auditioned, did you get hired specifically for one of the shows, or were you doing the atmosphere characters out amongst the park and then doing the show? What was that like?
So I got hired ultimately for the shows themselves. Okay. Host the shows. There was a show for opening ceremonies, which was right before the park opened, 30 minutes before, that kind of mm-hmm. was a pump up of the crowd. And then there was a daytime kids show called at the time it was called the Warner Brothers Kids Club Show. Looney Tunes Kids Club Show was what it ended up as at the end. So I was in that. But then I also was able to do street atmosphere talent. And then I also was able to be characters in those shows as well.
Now, how did you get into production management? Was that something that you started with your time at Six Flags?
I did. So after a couple of years of just performing, I actually was a stilt walker for a summer as well. I ended up taking on a co-choreographer position for Fright Fest, for a traveling show that would happen every single night, all okay. night long, for the event. And so I got to do that. And the great Dave Watson gave me that position. And he was an amazing mentor throughout it all. And then after that, that's when I kind of was pulled into this production role. And I got asked if I wanted to pursue this. And I said, okay. I hadn't really thought about it before. It hadn't sure. really crossed my mind. I always thought I would perform or choreograph or direct, and that was kind of where my brain was headed. But I got asked to help them out with Fright Fest and to be the production coordinator on it, and to basically make sure that every single thing got installed, the lumber was ordered, the right equipment was there, the backos, all the things, everything was there for the techs to be able to install. Any props were ordered, any scenic elements were ordered, all of those things were under my purview. And any vendors that we needed were also mine as well. And then on top of that, I also got to write my own show and choreograph it and direct it.
All right, so let's go into that process a little bit, because some people don't know what it takes to, you know, create a show basically from nothing and put it on, especially at a theme park when you've got thousands of people around. So walk us through that process of what it was like, you know, conceptualizing a show, pitching the show to supervisors. Just walk us through that process, please.
So I came up with this random concept of Peter and Wendy get lost on their way to the not so scary Halloween party. And they okay. run into the middle of Fright Fest, and they get basically taken over by all of our not so nice characters and or zombies or monsters or whatever they were.
Sure.
And so I pitched that in a very rough script of just kind of basically a creative treatment of this is what this would beat would be, this is what this next beat would be, and I would want to kind of maybe use this song to transition it and move this to, you know, and this is kind of what I'm thinking for a set and what I'm thinking for a cast, because you need to know kind of all those basic things so that when somebody's looking at it, they're going, okay, so if it's six people, then you've got how many days of rehearsals, that's how much money. So sure. There's always money in mind when you're building something like this.
Yeah.
How much are we going to spend is usually the number one question. How much is this yeah. going to cost? So I pitched it to my good friend, Mark, who was the creative over for Fright Fest at the time, mm-hmm. which I believe he still is. Now his purview is much bigger than what it used to be. And then we took that to Scott, who was our manager at the time, who's now director of entertainment for all of Six Flags Parks.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. He's a big guy now.
Yeah.
So we took that concept, creative treatment to him. And Mark actually did some rough sketches for me because he was a designer as well. So he did some sketches of what I wanted, what I was thinking. We took it to him, a pitch deck is what we call it in the industry. I talked him through it. I had him listen to the songs I was thinking about using for the show because it was going to be a musical too. So it was integrating modern music into this story of Peter and Wendy.
Gotcha.
And he really liked it and he thought it was great. But he wanted to bring in somebody who had a lot of knowledge and background in theme park shows just to help us really formulate it and, you know, give it more purpose and make sure we were getting the right information out there and what we really wanted the audience to see.
Sure.
So he brought on Don Burgess, who is wonderful and amazing man, who really took me under his wing and showed me the ins and outs of how to go from my concept, my big blue sky concept, and bring it into what ended up being a really amazing show that I'm really proud of to this day.
So how long did you spend working at Six Flags?
I was there almost 10 years.
Wow.
Just shy of my 10-year mark by like a couple months.
Oh, wow. Okay. So then the transition from working at Six Flags to Universal is a similar job that you're doing now at Universal versus what you finished doing at Six Flags?
Similar-ish. Six Flags, there were a lot more responsibilities that you took on outside of what your normal scope might be. So I worked as production manager, coordinator for all the shows and for Fright Fest and Holiday in the Park. But I also was a trainer. So I trained people how to scare and trained people how to not scare during holidays. I trained people how to walk on stilts. I choreographed things. I was also the makeup supervisor for Fright Fest and for holidays. So I oversaw that entire department while it was up and running each event. So there was lots of things that I was kind of overview or involved with when I was there. And now at Universal, it's very focused on production management, which is really nice.
So what exactly does that mean being, you know, a production manager at Universal? Walk me through like a typical day or a typical work week if you're working on a project for the park.
So if we're working on a project and it's just in the development phase, we aren't quite into production yet. We're development pre-production side. We're having meetings. We're talking to vendors. We're talking to our IP holders, which are our intellectual properties. So thinking Universal, you're thinking Jurassic World. So that's, you know, maybe our Universal Pictures group that we have to talk to. It could be Steven Spielberg's company that we need to talk to because that's their baby. Although it's a Universal picture, it's still, you know, Steven Spielberg still is going to have a say in it, maybe. We're talking to Warner Brothers if it's for Harry Potter. So there's all different, depending on where you are and what project you're on. You could be dealing with any one of those guys at any point. Then we're starting to understand what the design is going to be and how that design then becomes reality. So it's from the concept art to the technical drafts, to the install documents, the fabrications of those elements. So if we're building a scenic piece, then we're usually talking to an outside vendor. We're talking to a construction company. We're talking to a, you know, a GC, general contractor. All those people, a scenic company might be involved. We have to talk to them, see vendor visits and everything. And then we get to do the cool stuff, which is the install.
Sure.
This is really cool too, but nobody really gets to see that. It's the install when you get to start to see the walls going up and you see the concrete being laid and the scenic elements going in and the paint and maybe it's a marquee sign, which usually is just a giant sign that says what it is. And people start to get excited about it.
So you've got a lot of things that you're managing all at the same time, interacting with all different levels of people. Was this something that did you go to school for this to learn all of these skills?
I did not.
Okay.
Surprising. I know. yes, you should go to school for this. You should.
Sure.
But I did not. I got very lucky in where I've been and where I've gotten to go in my career. And based on my abilities and knowledge and my 6 years of doing this at Six Flags, they were willing to take a chance on me and take me on as somebody who didn't necessarily have a degree in it, but had just as much experience as somebody with a degree would have.
Understandable. Is this something that had you heard about like production management while you were in school? Do you think that that would have been something that could have been beneficial to hear? Like, oh, there's this type of a position. That sounds really interesting. That way you can kind of find the avenues to maybe pursue a higher degree.
I think so. I mean, growing up, I was so focused on performing and mm-hmm. on that side of it. And even the other back of house things that I really focused in on any attention on were directing, choreographing, and stage managing. Really were sure. the three things that I kind of did that kind of led me towards being a production manager, which a stage manager is very close in the world of a production manager. They usually mm-hmm. work hand in hand once you get to that level of being able to start mounting a show and getting it out. A stage manager, usually a production stage manager, comes in to help out and be a part of that. So if I had known that this was a more of a career path younger, I probably would have. I probably would have probably pursued it a bit more.
But obviously you said you've been lucky that you've had people along the way that have kind of helped show you the ropes. So you've been able to kind of have more of that hands-on approach rather than sit in a classroom and learn the theory.
Yeah, exactly. I had amazing mentors, even from, you know, Nancy and Steve Whalen, through Dave Watson, through Don Burgess, you know, even Scott Sterner from Six Flags, who really helped pave the path for me to be able to be where I'm at.
So what have been some of the projects that you've worked on in your time at Universal Studios Hollywood?
So some of the projects have been Lunar New Year, which okay. is a yearly event that we put on with Mr. Ping as our forefront from Kung Fu Panda. Okay. He sells his noodles and they're delicious. I've also worked on Grad Bash, okay. which is the seniors from high school. They get to mm-hmm. come to our park and have the park to themselves with other schools. But we do put on a huge concert for them. So that's kind of this a giant party that we throw on for them. We have sure. giant photo ops for people to interact with. We did this yearbook wall, which was really cool, where people could sign their name in the just giant oversized yearbook. Yeah, it was really nice. And then the biggest project that I worked on thus far has mm-hmm. been the Jurassic World remount. We took Jurassic Park and made it Jurassic World. And for okay. the entertainment side, we actually brought Blue to the park and a Triceratops and a baby raptor.
Gotcha. Oh, okay. So walk me through that process of what it's like to bring a dinosaur into Southern California. Coming up with that idea, coming up with the interactive experience, because I know that that's a big element of it. Just walk us through the process from creative to implementation and all of that kind of stuff, getting ready to show launch.
Yeah. So it usually starts with some sort of concept, creative concept that comes up. This was definitely more of a Universal Parks and Resorts thing. So this was, they knew they wanted to take Jurassic Park and change it into Jurassic World and give it a facelift for the new generation. Mm-hmm. So what could we do and implement from entertainment side that would be new and exciting to go along with it? So our creative heads get together and they go, well, dinosaurs, duh. It starts with that. And then the team gets brought on once that becomes a reality and we get some funding associated to it. And then we start from there. We start with a WAG, which is a wild guess. I won't say the middle word because it's not good. But then we start there and we say, okay, so this is what we think it's going to cost to create these dinosaurs and create a home for them to live in, because you can't just have dinosaurs out all the time. You got to figure out a way to house them and keep them in a location that makes sense and that goes with the world. You know, we can't just stick them in a room. We got to make a realistic, scenic room for them so that when people come and see them, they are immersed into that environment.
Gotcha.
So that becomes a thing. And so that usually ends up being more concept art has to happen. So a designer is usually drawing out things. Then we start getting engineering involved because we now have to figure out how are we going to build this thing? Which then usually leads to some sort of contractor, general contractor, a GC usually has to come in because I physically cannot build a building. So I need people to do it for me. But I will pay them to do it. So getting them involved and saying, okay, so this is what we would like to do. It's going to be this size of a building. We need it this tall. We want it to have these scenic elements on it. How much is that going to cost me? And then usually we get brought down to reality. So we have to go back to the drawing board sometimes and we have to rejudge some things. And then once we get through that process, then we get into actual fabrication. So we're then starting to build the costumes. We are building the building. We're laying down the space. We're putting concrete down. We're putting up 2x4s for the sides of the walls. Concrete's going in. All the fun things are starting. Mm-hmm. And then as that's happening, we also have site visits to check on things. We also have outside of site visits. So we go either off-site or a couple of people go off-site to go check on other elements that maybe aren't here. So for the dinosaurs, we had to go do that a couple of times to go check on them and see their progress. And then for from there, it's getting the operations team involved. So auditions, rehearsals, where are we going to rehearse? I got a giant dinosaur. Where is that going to go? All those logistical things that you have to figure out. Then you have rehearsals and you get it mounted. And we have our executive preview, which is where our park president and other senior vice presidents come out and they see it. They throw in their 2 cents and we get to open.
So start to finish, what was the timeline like? How long are we talking?
So we worked on, it was a year and 3 months.
Wow. Okay.
Before we opened. Yeah.
Okay. And were you there from the beginning of the process?
I was. Wow, I was there from the beginning of the process all the way through.
That's a pretty big accomplishment.
It is. It was a lot. That actually happened within the first couple months of me being there. So I did Grad Bash and then I immediately went into this project, which was amazing, which I'm so proud of.
All right. So you open a show, if you will, like the Jurassic World experience. Do you get time to like sit there and be like, I helped create dinosaurs and bring dinosaurs to life? Or are you just like, cool, that's open. What's next?
There is maybe a 24 hours where you get to be really excited. it is really short. At least for me, during this process, it was because I had to move on to the next thing. But just because we open something doesn't mean we're done. We have lots of things that we have to do on the back end. So I have to close out a budget. I have to do close out documentation. So anything that we built, engineering documents, just the normal layout documents, everything has to go to one document server that is kept on property that we have to compile all of this information and give it to them so that there is one place that you can go and say, okay, so we built this 3 years ago. Does anybody know what's going on there? Like, what kind of conduit runs are in there and what kind of, you know,
sure,
what is it made out of? Those kinds of things.
Right.
We have to build all of those things once we're open. So we do get a moment of excitement and, you know, we get to pat ourselves on the back for, you know, a day as it opens and everything is, we finally can go sigh of relief. We've opened, the guests are enjoying themselves. This is so exciting. And then we go right back into it. I mean, the great thing about what we do, especially in a theme park, is I can go down to the lower lot and go check it out whenever I want to. It doesn't go away. It's right there. So I can, if I want to go see the dinosaurs, I can just go right down, you know, down an escalator, all three of them, go down the escalator and go see it myself. I don't have to, you know, wonder how they're doing. I can just go pop over there and just check on them.
What's it like working specifically at a park like Universal? Because Universal is, it's a living, breathing movie set. There's always something filming there. So what's it like, that hustle and bustle of, you know, you're walking by and being like, oh, look, there goes, you know, this film crew, or this is filming over here. What's that like?
I mean, for us, it's not as crazy as it may seem, because I'm not necessarily in the back lot as much.
Gotcha.
But we do know when things are being filmed and we have to be very hush hush about things that are going on. And sometimes you run right into filming and you don't know it.
Yeah.
Because they often use our backlot a lot. So even where the studio tour goes, sometimes that's why if you do the studio tour, like if you're a pass holder or something and you've done it different times, you'll notice that maybe sometimes you're not always doing the same route. It's because there's probably filming happening and you can't get to that area right now.
Sure.
So I have to take you an opposite way, or you miss this part of the tour because, you know, they're filming on New York Street or something.
So what have been some of the challenges that you faced in this? Because we kind of touched base about it, you know, a little bit with the community theater aspect. But here, again, you're a young woman who's leading these crews and leading production teams and stuff like that. Has that been a challenge for you? Do you get any sort of pushback or anything like that?
Actually, no. I know, it's crazy. But I mean, I'm being truthful. Like, we really have a great team.
That's good.
Even the people that we have around us, our senior leadership, they're amazing. They really are. They understand where we're coming from because they've done it. They've been us.
Sure.
They know what's going on and they're highly involved. Our senior director is in it with us all the time. I have meetings where I have to give project checkups every couple of weeks, and I just kind of download our senior leadership and say, this is where we're at. This is where this project's at. This is our hurdles. This is, you know, red flag. We need help, you know, but they understand that and they actually trust us to do those things, which is amazing. And I mean, I couldn't ask for a better team to be a part of.
Well, that's always a positive thing, because I know there's a lot of places where sometimes middle management doesn't feel supported by upper management. So it's nice to hear that with a park the size of Universal, with the reputation that Universal has as a park, that you guys are still getting that support from above.
Oh yeah, we do. I mean, there are going to be challenges. I won't say that there aren't. There are always challenges. There's always obstacles that you have to face, but you know, that's what makes you stronger. And that's what makes you better, is being able to work through that and learn, because that's really the only way you do learn.
So with those challenges, how have you developed the skills to power through those? Do you think that it comes strictly from your hands-on experience and, you know, your years in a theme park? Is it something that you think you may have been kind of naturally born with, those types of skills?
I mean, I could always say I was a little bossy. But no, I mean, I think that I've always tried to do unto others as I would like done unto me. So, okay. You know, if I'm having a hard time, I'm not going to just start yelling and screaming at somebody. I'm sure. going to say, hey, what's the deal? Can we work through this? How can we get through this together? Because at the end of the day, we have to get through this. So,
absolutely.
You know, we can't just be angry at each other because it's not the right color. You know, can we change the color? Like, how much is that going to cost us to change the color? Or can we settle on the fact that this is the color it's going to be and we can move on with our lives? You know, it's managing those kinds of things, but it's doing it in a way that you feel human still because, you know, you can't just yell at people all the time because that doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
You don't feel good about that. And they don't feel good about that. And then your product goes down.
So with just as an example of like a paint color thing, has there been a time where, you know, you've got your little paint swatch and you're like, oh, look at this color. This is a really beautiful color. And then you paint a wall and you just go, oh no. Has that happened to you guys? And then you just kind of go repaint it, or like you said, just kind of go, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's happened before. There's things that go wrong all the time.
Sure.
And it's weighing the costs is really what it comes down to. And is it, how much money is it going to cost me? One.
Right. Two,
is it that far off? Because sometimes it might not be that far off.
Sure.
Or is it something that we now have to then go back to an IP, that intellectual property, go back to them and say, look, the color that we pulled actually is not working. Like this is what it looks like in real life versus the paint chip that we have that we sent.
Sure.
What do you want? And sometimes it has to be that way, depending on the kind of IP that you're working with.
So with the process of creating a show, you obviously, you kind of get it on its feet. You see how it's running. Is there any time that you guys have had to make adjustments based off of, you know, how it's received by the guests in the park?
Yeah. We've had to do that all the time. And with Lunar New Year this year, we actually made some adjustments to prior year's event. So we had to kind of just let it happen and go out with it as we had written it, how we had wanted it to be, and not really know how it was going to be received. And as it was evolving and as, you know, guests were going in and interacting, we noticed that we just needed to make really slight adjustments here and there to make sure that it was really up to our standards and what our show quality team would want. So, I mean, they were very minor changes. It was like, host stand here, host come here, you know, but those tiny little details can make and change in a guest interaction and make it so much better sometimes that you just have to make them. And, you know, sometimes you don't know until you get guests in there because, I mean, as much as I can go up and rehearse with somebody, I know what's going to happen. I know how they're, and I know what they're going to say. I know what the script says. So I know how to react to them. Whereas a guest that's brand new, that's never seen this before, doesn't know what they're going to do. So they have to go up and, you know, we stand there and we watch and we go, okay, are they getting it? Do they understand what's happening? No? Oh, okay. So let's make this adjustment to see how that works. And, you know, sometimes you have to do it.
Gotcha. So when you're observing that kind of stuff, it really is to observe what they're doing rather than like you're sitting in the back and a joke doesn't land and you're like, ha.
I mean, yeah, there. I mean, that's a part of it sometimes is sometimes a joke doesn't land or sometimes it just doesn't make sense to somebody, which it made perfect sense to us because we were in it. We were involved in it. We knew it. You know, it had explained to us a million times. We knew what was going on. Whereas, you know, some guests coming in that hasn't seen it is going to go, huh? You want me to do what? That's not fun. You know? So, you know, sometimes you have to adjust.
Yeah. Have you had any issues going off that, you know, you guys are in it, so you've had stuff, certain things explained, so it may make more sense to you. But have you guys had any issues with something that could be like a language barrier because you have tourists coming from outside of America and they see your show and just aren't getting it. Is there any examples like that that you've had?
At least for me, no. I think that our performers do a really good job to explain things and get people to understand. And for the most part, most tourists kind of just go with the flow of what's happening, and they don't necessarily try and do anything completely out of, you know, the realm of possibility. They don't try and make it harder. Usually they understand, like, stand here, take your photo, you know, those kinds of things they get inherently. So
let's go into the future, 10 to 15 years or so. Where do you see yourself? Do you still want to be working for Universal? Do you want to work your way up the ladder? Is there a way up the ladder?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to be at Universal still. It's a wonderful company. It's been amazing. And the people are great. And what we get to do is so cool. Yeah. I have a really cool job, guys. Like, really cool. And just because it is a back of house, it's not necessarily out front performing, doesn't mean that I don't get to see what those guests get to experience. And, you know, I get to see how excited they are to see Blue for the first time, or the first time they meet a Triceratops. Like, that's an amazing feeling. Like, seeing people's, like, eyes wide, mouth on the floor, like, jaw on the floor. Like, they see a Triceratops come walking down the street and making noises and spitting on them. Like,
oh,
he does it, Space.
Oh, okay.
He's cold. She has a cold. She's sick.
Have there been those moments? Because we kind of talk about, like, have there been those moments where you're like, look what I did? But have you done, like, had those moments, like, say, for example, you're having a meeting with some of these IP holders or anything like that. Have you had, like, that internal moment where you're just like, holy cow, I'm talking to these people that control this entity, or worked with a vendor where you're just like, oh, you guys make this too? That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Raptor Encounter was the epitome of that. Working with our Universal Pictures groups and our vendor that helped us with the dinosaurs, like, you're just like, oh my God, I'm here. I'm dealing with these people. And I'm talking to them all the time. And now I'm, like, friends with them. This is great. Like, how is this real? How is this my life? But yeah, it's amazing. It's so cool.
Going from spending almost a decade with Six Flags and then deciding that your next step was going to be Universal, was that, like, an immediate decision? Did you want to go to other theme parks? Because there's this other one down in Orange County that everyone likes to talk about. Or was there people, like, from Universal that you knew that kind of were like, hey, come join the party?
There was a huge surge of people from Six Flags that left to go to Universal right before, maybe, I would say maybe between a year to 6 months before I left. And they were like, you should come here. You should come work here. We miss you. You know, it's great. So much fun. And I kept going, well, but I've got a great job here, and, you know, I love people I work with. And I honestly didn't really think that I would get the job. I was just kind of like, you know, what's the harm if I go for it? And so I did. I applied for, actually, at the time it was an assistant production manager position, so an APM. And I happened to get an interview, and it was kind of like, oh, okay. And so I went, and I didn't think anything would come of it. And then I got a call a week later, and they were like, hey, we want you to come in again for another interview. And I was like, oh, this is getting, like, real. Like, this is a real thing. Like they might want me. And so I went in for that next interview, and I met more people, and I did a walk through the park, and I was like, I don't want to get my hopes up, but I'm pretty sure that they want me. And then maybe a day later, I got a call from the HR department, and they were like, so they want you, and they want you to start next week. And I was like, whoa, time out. And I'm not the kind of person that just like up and leaves. Like, I'm not like that.
Sure.
I want to see it through. I want to see the whole project through. So, I had lots of conversations, with my supervisor and manager at Six Flags. And I said, I can't pass this up. This is how I can continue to grow and get more knowledge and get better and, you know, learn more. And so, I went back to, Universal HR and I said, look, I need to finish out what I'm working on right now. Can you give me 2 weeks?
Sure.
And so they said, well, let us ask. And so they did. And they said, okay, fine. We'll give you 2 weeks before you need to be here working. And I said, okay. So in those 2 weeks at Six Flags, I had to finish all of my documentation that I could. I wrote like 50 million SOPs about, which is a standard operating procedures.
Thank you.
About everything that I did, like all my training things that I did, all of my choreography was written down. All of my director notes were written down. All of my makeup artist stuff was written down, like everything. And I literally worked up until the day before I started at Universal.
Wow.
And because I was slotted to choreograph the kids show. So everybody in early so that I could teach the choreography. And the last day of my work at Six Flags, I was teaching choreography. And then I literally started the next day at Universal at 9 a.m.
Wow. Well, you said that you interviewed for an assistant production manager. How did it become a regular production manager? Was it through that interview process, or like once they talk to you, they're just like, oh no, she's not an assistant.
No. So I started as an assistant. I was an APM for a few months. It just was the luck of the draw. And I just happened to be right in the right place at the right time. And, the PM, which is a production manager, at the time that I was supposed to be working with on the Raptor Jurassic World project, ended up leaving the company, and I ended up taking it on as an APM for a few months before I finally was promoted to a PM. But I was doing the work of an APM and a PM for those few months before I was promoted.
If you're to go back in time and give yourself like a younger Camber some advice of stuff that you've learned along the way, or maybe if it's a piece of advice that you'd like to share with the next generation of artists, what would you go back and say, or what would you say to those kids today?
I would say follow your dreams. There is no one way in the entertainment world. You don't have to just settle for one thing, and you don't have to feel like you're a failure if you choose something new. Just because I wanted to perform and go to Broadway, and that was what I wanted out of life, and that was what I was going for. Just because I changed my path doesn't mean it's less than. It means to bring joy to people in a different way. I might not always get the credit for it because I'm not out there performing, so I don't get the applause every day, but I do get to see it. And I still get to be a part of it. And I still have a piece of it. And, you know, don't give up just because it's hard, and it will be very hard. It's not an easy career. I mean, nothing in life is easy. You know, just keep working, take those mentors, ask them all the questions in the world, and keep learning, and don't be afraid to learn.
Camber, it has been an honor speaking with you. I've loved and I'm very proud of the work that you've done over the years, seeing you from, you know, a choreographer and young director at the Canyon Theater Guild to production manager and everything that you did at Six Flags, and now what you're doing at Universal. I think it's awesome work that you're doing, and thank you so much for joining us on Talking Backstage.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Of course. We'll see you soon. Thanks for joining me here at the Newhall Family Theater. Until next time, I'm your host, Tom Lund. I'll see you backstage.